All right, I'm just going to welcome you guys real quick. You are listening to the brand new Mark Moss Show, where I am going to take you through the world of Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, this new system, the new financial system, but even bigger than that. I'm going to take you through that each and every week into what I believe is what I would call the biggest, the largest asymmetric opportunity that you'll ever see in your lifetime, that probably several generations will ever see in their lifetime. Now, what does that mean, asymmetric opportunity? Well, investors, real investors, are looking for things they call asymmetric opportunities. And that means that it has more upside than downside, right? So symmetric would be there the same. We don't want that. I want more reward than the potential risk that I'm putting out. Now, the way to get asymmetric opportunities in life is to have asymmetric information. You have to know something that most people don't. No, otherwise you'd be in the great majority, you'd be in the herd, and well, you're going to find out in life that usually being in the herd is not where you want to be. And if you want to get asymmetric opportunities, then you don't want to be in the herd. You need to be in front of the herd, right? You want to get into that position before the herd gets there and pushes that forward. And again, like I said, the only way to do that is with asymmetric information, which is what I'm going to bring to you each and every week. And so write this down, bookmark this timestamp. You do not want to miss this because it could be the biggest opportunity of your lifetime. So you don't want to miss it. It's that important. So again, thanks for joining the Mark Moss Show. And so today we're going to talk about Bitcoin. We're going to talk about cryptocurrencies. We're going to talk about the revolution. Now, I've been doing a lot of work on my YouTube channel and on Twitter. By the way, you can follow me on Twitter. It's the number one Mark Moss. And I talk about there's three revolutions that are all converging right now. And these are different revolutions. They're in different areas. Now, when you're looking at financial markets, typically we're looking for things called indicators. And indicators are things that we're hoping tell us what the future holds. Now, the thing about indicators is that you don't want to look at just one indicator. You want to look at as many indicators as you possibly can, and then you're looking for them to kind of have this consensus. You're looking for them to kind of show you that there's this agreement there. And so when I'm looking at these three revolutions, I'm also looking for indicators. And so what a lot of people look at is they go, well, shoot, the financial system is overstressed. We can see that inflation's running sky high. You know, the United States Federal Reserve, the central bank, has, you know, pumped in about $8 trillion over the last 18 months. We can see that now the government in the United States is talking about a shutdown because the debt ceiling, they have to raise the debt ceiling. And so we can see that the financial system is, you know, it's about out of moves. And if we were playing a game, let's say we were playing, I don't know, Scrabble, eventually you run out of moves. And when everybody runs out of moves, what do? Well, you reset the game. And that's exactly what our financial system is doing. It's time to reset the game. And so that's one indicator. But what other indicators are there? And so there's those move on 80-year cycles, 80-year timeframes. All right, financial systems, financial revolutions work on about every 80 years. So 80 years ago was the Bretton Woods Agreement. That's when the whole world moved onto a gold standard. All right, now I know we're going to talk about Bitcoin, we're going to talk about cryptocurrencies, but I'm trying to establish this base for you. Okay, so let's move on 80-year cycles. Then there's another revolutionary cycle, and it's a technological revolution cycle. And those move on 50-year timeframes. And a technological revolution is what we're talking about right now. We're talking about something so big that it literally changes all of humanity. It changes the course of humanity. And I know that's a big statement, but let me prove it to you. So I'm not talking about a new technology. I'm not talking about the iPhone. I'm not talking about Uber or Airbnb, and those were cool, but it didn't change humanity, right? I'm talking about something so big it changes the course of humanity. So there's been five in the last 250 years. We can go back to the 1700s with the Industrial Revolution, which took people from the farms, from the cottage industry, and it put them into factories and built cities. It changed humanity. Approximately 50 years later, we had the age of steam engines and steel. So for all of humanity, we had manpower, some horsepower. Now we had steam engines that allowed us to move big loads across the world. And then we had steel. Before steel, we could build, you know, brick buildings two stories high. Now we could build skyscrapers. We could build bridges, et cetera, et cetera. Changed humanity. Fast forwarding, we had the invention of electricity. Now, at the time, electricity was just like, you know, it was kind of like a digital candle. You know, what do we need electricity for? We have candles. Candles have worked good for a long time, right? The candle makers came out in this, you know, coordinated effort to shut electricity down. We don't need electricity. We have candles, right? They want to protect their interest. Of course, electricity is way bigger. It changed humanity, and it allows us to even do what we're doing today. You wouldn't even be able to hear me right this minute if we didn't have electricity, right? It was much bigger than it was. It was a replacement for candles at the time, but it became something so much bigger. Fast forward approximately another 50 years. We have the age of oil, automobiles, and mass production, and it changed humanity. Imagine, for all of humanity, people walked or rode horses, and that was it. And now they could drive, which means now they could transport materials and they could ship things and all these things. It changed humanity. Fast forward, 1971 was the age of the microprocessor, which had brought us personal computers, which then allowed us to have smartphones, allowed us to have the internet. Again, things like we're using right this minute that I'm broadcasting to you from. And so you add 1971 plus 50 years, which puts us to right now. We're facing another technological revolution. So that's a 50-year cycle. Then there's one more indicator I'm going to break down, and then we'll jump in. The other indicator is what I would call political or social or cultural revolutions. And those work on about 250-year timeframes. And about every 250 years, we see a revolution. So 250 years ago from now was the American and the French Revolution. 250 years before that was the Protestant Reformation. What both of those represented, those revolutions represented, was peak globalization or peak centralization, and the world pushed back on that and moved to decentralization. So as this 250-year cycle of pushing back against centralization and moving to decentralization is here, 250-year cycle, we have a 50-year technological revolution that's giving us exactly what we need. So the world's rejecting centralization to move to decentralization, and we have a brand new technology that gives us decentralization at the very time we need it. Now, the other thing to keep in mind is that these technological revolutions drive financial markets. And so what's interesting, as the 250-year revolution cycle is hitting at the same time as the 50-year technological revolution cycle that then creates a new financial market, the financial system on an 80-year cycle is also hitting at the same time, converging, and is ready to be reset. When you converge all three of these cycles, it creates the biggest disruption in the world, and for a lot of people, if they're not paying attention, is disastrous. But if you're paying attention, it can be the biggest opportunity of your life, and that is what we are talking about with Bitcoin, with decentralization. And I am going to tell you how to play this by giving you this asymmetric information that you need so you can take advantage of this asymmetric opportunity. All right, now I want to talk about some things so you can kind of really understand how big this is. Some countries around the world are now talking about this. It went from, you know, I think it was Gandhi who said, you know, first they laugh at you, then they try to fight you, and then they finally join you, kind of a thing. And that's exactly what we've been seeing. You know, for the last decade, we've watched Bitcoin kind of grow, and a lot of people make fun of it. A lot of people think there's no use case for it. There's no need for it. Then they're trying to fight it and stop it. You know, the governments are trying to create regulations around it or make it illegal, like one country just did this week, albeit for the ninth time. And some countries are actually joining it and adopting it. And so I'm going to tell you about that. When we get, I want to talk to you about which countries are trying to regulate it, which countries are trying to make it illegal, and which countries are adopting it. And when you can understand, more importantly, why this is happening, it will help you better prepare for what you need to do to take advantage of this. We'll talk about it when I get back in just a second. All right, you are back listening to The Mark Moss Show. I'm talking about the revolution of Bitcoin, of cryptocurrencies. And yeah, I'm not trying to overhype this. I'm talking about a revolution. If you missed the previous segment before the break, well, you missed out where I set the stage of these three revolutionary cycles that are converging right now. But we're going to keep moving forward on this. You're listening to The Mark Moss Show, talking about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. And really the reason why I want to talk to you on this show about this is because it is the biggest opportunity of your life, the biggest asymmetric opportunity of your life. But in order to navigate this correctly, you have to have the asymmetric information. You have to have the information that most people don't have. So going back into where we were talking about it, you know, I was saying how, you know, Gandhi's statement of first they laugh at you, you know, then they try to fight you, and then they join you. And that's exactly what we've seen this evolution of Bitcoin take. And we've gone from that, well, first they ignore you. Then we move to the laughing at you. Everyone that participated in this, what do they call it? Magic internet money. They're ridiculous, right? Like, I only trust things I can hold in my hand. You might hear the boomers talking about that. Of course, anybody, I don't want to exclude people by age group, but I think by this point, most people realize that digital things are in fact real. As a matter of fact, over 80% of our currency transactions today are done digital. So I don't know why people have a hard time believing that magic digital money. So they laughed at us. Of course, then they started to fight us. And so we saw China come out and ban Bitcoin. And then they came out and banned it again. And then they banned it again. And they banned it again. As a matter of fact, this week, China came out and said that they make all cryptocurrency transactions illegal. Now, what's interesting is I believe this is the 8th or 9th time that China has banned it. And so I guess the first thing I would say is, it must be pretty hard to ban if they've banned it 9 times and they haven't even been able to get it done. But of course, they just continue to ramp it up and ramp it up and ramp it up. And so it was just a couple of months ago, they banned Bitcoin mining, and they pushed all the Bitcoin miners out of the country. I don't want to get deep into the technical aspects of this for you guys that maybe aren't up to speed on this, because it's really not that important. But in order for the Bitcoin network to work and to remain, to keep its level of decentralization, it's a decentralized technology, which means nobody controls it. And we want that. We don't want anyone to control it. And the reason why it's decentralized with nobody controlling it is because anybody could, and I do this, and I would recommend you to as well once you learn about it, but anybody could run a copy of the database, and it's called a node. And it's about 300 gigabytes. It's not very big on a small little portable hard drive, smaller than your iPhone. You could run that, and you just plug it into your Wi-Fi router, and you can run your own node. And you run an entire copy of the database, and there's people all over the world running them. And that's what keeps the network decentralized, so nobody can control it. And then the miners are computers that actually help process the transactions. Well, one of the big gripes of people that want to fight against Bitcoin say that, well, China had control of the miners because they had over 51% of those miners there. Now, because it's decentralized, because everybody can run their own copy of the database, in order for a transaction to happen, because it's decentralized, the network has to achieve consensus. That means 51% of the network has to agree that this transaction is valid. Again, not trying to go super deep into this. But because China had over 51% of these miners, theoretically, they could have potentially, maybe, done some nefarious actions on the network. Well, a couple months ago, China kicked them all out of the country, basically shut down over half of the network. Now, they could have tried to co-op it and take it over, but instead they kicked them out. And we witnessed in real time probably one of the greatest technological marvels ever witnessed. Imagine if Amazon, with their global distribution centers and their global networks, imagine if half of Amazon's network shut down overnight and was forced to relocate. What type of disruption do you think that would take? How long do you think that would take Amazon to literally pack up their distribution centers and relocate them across the world? And what disruption would that have to the Amazon distribution or network or Coca-Cola or whatever? Well, we witnessed it happen on the Bitcoin network. And all those miners left China and got redistributed around the world. And, you know, for a month or two, we saw, you know, transaction times get a little bit more expensive or take a little bit longer, but it absorbed it pretty well. Well, that was a few months ago, and now China came out this week and said again that they want to declare all transactions illegal. And they say, and I'm going to quote them per their press release, it says, the decision was made to, quote, in order to safeguard people's properties and maintain, key piece here, and maintain economic, financial, and social order, end quote. See what they're saying here? Did you hear that part? Let me read it again. Quote, in order to safeguard people's properties and, important part here, maintain economic, financial, and social order, end quote. Well, what they're really saying is that people shouldn't have the ability to choose whatever they want to store their wealth in. What they're saying is that people shouldn't have the freedom to use whatever they think is money. Because per what they're saying here, if you're reading between the lines, what this quote is saying is that if you use another form of money, you'll disrupt the economic and financial and social order. Now, why is that? All right. Why is that happening? So, like I said earlier, the first thing is, they're obviously having to ban it multiple times, so the banning doesn't really work. But I want to tell you what they actually mean by that piece. There's something that I want to introduce to you. It's called the Mundell-Fleming trilemma. All right. Now, a dilemma, you're probably familiar with that word, right? It's a dilemma. Well, I'm forced to choose one or the other. Well, a trilemma is similar, except for now there's three options, and you can't have all three. You've got to choose between two out of the three. And that is what China is facing. But it's not just China. You need to understand this Mundell-Fleming trilemma, because every nation that controls their own money is going to be facing the exact same trilemma, the exact same problem. And so I want to explain that to you, but also I want to talk to you about that even though they've banned all the mining and kicked them out of the country, and now they've made all cryptocurrency illegal, as of yesterday, there's still almost 150 Bitcoin nodes running in China. Remember I told you the nodes, they run the entire copy of the database. And so as of yesterday, at the time of this recording, there's about 150 of these Bitcoin nodes running. And so I want to show you that because it's important to understand the network cannot be shut down. That's why it's so revolutionary. And I want to talk to you about this trilemma because, like I said, if your country controls their own currency, the United States or Europe, ECB, then you need to understand this. So we're going to talk about that. I want to explain to you how this works. And once you see how simple this is, you're going to be able to understand this for what it really is. So I'm going to be right back with you in a second. All right, welcome back. Now you're listening to the brand new Mark Moss Show, where I am going to be bringing you the most up-to-date, most recent information on Bitcoin, on cryptocurrencies, and the state of the financial system in the world today. Now, just real quick, before you make up your mind if this is for you or if it isn't, let me just tell you real quick. This is, and I'm going to continue to prove this to you each and every week, this is the biggest opportunity that you have ever seen in your lifetime, and not just your lifetime or my lifetime, but even like our kids and our parents and our grandparents. I'm talking multi-generational because it's part of a 50-year technological revolution. All right. Now, the way that you take advantage of these massive opportunities, these asymmetric opportunities, by having asymmetric information, information that most people don't have, which is why I am going to bring that to you each and every week. So take note of what station and what time you're listening to this as of right now, and set your calendar reminder to tune in with me each and every week, because I guarantee it will be worth your time. It could change your life. Now, jumping back into where we were before the break, we're talking about how China has again, banned Bitcoin and banned cryptocurrencies multiple times. But a couple things. One, I said that it's not working, and that's why they have to ban it 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 times, because they can't actually do it. And even after they've done this final declaration of banning again, as of yesterday, we can see that there's still over about 150 Bitcoin nodes that are still running in China. And so, they can tell you can't do it, but can they really stop it? It's digital. Now, that's something to talk about, and I'd love to dig into that. But I want to jump back to one other point. And the point that I was talking about before we went to the break is that there's something known as the Mundell-Fleming trilemma. And you have to understand this, because this is the reason why China is trying to ban it. This is the same reason why, regardless of what country you may be from, if they control their own currency, they're facing the exact same trilemma. And so what is that trilemma? Let me break it down for you. If you were with us before the break, I said that the quote from China is, quote, in order to safeguard people's properties and maintain economic, financial, and social order. All right. So the trilemma helps us understand why they said that piece. So the three things are first, a nation, like I said, can only keep two of these three policies at the same time. So the first is a managed or a fixed currency. The second is managing the interest rates. And the third is free capital flowing in and out with other nations. All right. So let me break those down for you. So the first is the fixed currency. So, you know, nations, they're forced to choose, right? They can have the good stuff that evens out the economy. So it's the fixed currency and managing the interest rates. And so that's what, you know, like the United States or China does, right? They manage the amount of money in the system. They try to manage the currency, the strength. You hear about nations devaluing their currencies against each other, right? And so they manage the strength of their currency, where they do that by the amount of the currency that they produce. And they also do it with interest rates. So in the United States, they've pushed interest rates down to basically zero. Most of the other nations are at zero or even negative at this point. And they do that. So they manage the currency, they manage the interest rates. But then the third piece is the free-flowing capital in and out of the country. And so any nation wants money coming in, right? They want investment capital coming into the nation. They want other nations to buy their debt, buy their bonds, loan them money, et cetera. All right. But the problem is the trilemma. At some point, those policies become at odds with each other. And so let me give you an example. When currency valuations or interest rates get out of whack, so for example, interest rates go negative. About half of the world's bonds right now are negative yielding, meaning when you loan them money, instead of getting interest back, you're actually paying them to borrow. And so what that means is that when that happens, guess what? I don't want to put my money in that country. So the money leaves. It starts to flow out of that economy. But what happens when that happens? When all the capital starts leaving the country, it sends the country into what we'd call a death spiral, right? And we've seen this many times. And looking at Asia in the 1990s is a perfect example of that. But the Chinese, they want it all. And so does the United States, and so does the ECB and every other country. They want it all. But of course, per the trilemma, they can't have it. And so they want to manage their currency and the interest rates. They want to keep a grip on that, but they don't want the capital to flow away. But that causes friction on the economy because people, myself, businesses, they're always going to try to maximize our wealth. And so if I'm stuck in a currency that's losing value really quickly, like for example, the US dollar lost over 25% of its purchasing power last year. That means if you had $100,000 in the bank account last year, it buys about $75,000 worth of goods today. Well, shoot, that doesn't sound very good, does it? Which is why people are rushing to buy other things. Now, if you're in countries that have massive inflation, like Lebanon, for example, that saw about 95% inflation in a year, or Venezuela that sees like 2,500% inflation a year, you're trying to get out of that currency and move into another currency. I don't want to hold the Lebanon or the Venezuelan currency. I'll move into the US dollar currency, right? Because that's not losing value. But the more they do that, the more it crashes the economy. So what do? Well, what they do is they make it where it's impossible for you to move your money out of the currency. It's what's called capital controls. It's kind of the final stage that any empire would have, and they would do that. And so if they can ban cryptocurrency, they can remove a way for people to get out of the Chinese currency. Does that make sense? That's exactly what's happening. In China, of course, it's not easy to move into other currencies, but people have been able to at least move into Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. And so China doesn't want that. They do not want an escape valve, an escape hatch, a life raft, whatever you want to call it. They want to keep people trapped in there. Now, it's also no coincidence that China at the same time is rolling out their own what we call central bank digital currency, a CBDC. They're calling it a ECNY, a digital renminbi. And basically, they're rolling this out. They're going to be the first nation in the world to have their own central bank digital currency. Of course, it's controlled by the People's Bank of China. And they're going to say, well, it's just like Bitcoin. It's just like cryptocurrencies, but it's without all the risks. Well, what risks? The risk to the financial system, right? And so you can understand, per this trilemma, if they manipulate the currency and the interest rates, then it's going to force people out of the currency and stop flows in. And so I'll just ask you, does the country that you're in, which I'm guessing at this point you're listening from the United States, and we have the United States Federal Reserve, do they face the same problem? Well, let's see. They've added about $8 trillion in the last year. They've pushed interest rates to zero. And if people start moving their money into different types of assets or currencies, then they'll find themselves in the same problem, right? If a lot of people move, they got a problem on their hands, which, of course, is the point, right? It is the point. We're not going to get super deep into that. But understanding that, then going back to this quote from China, you understand what they're saying. In order to safeguard or maintain economic and financial and social order. So what China's saying is, if everybody leaves our Chinese dollar and goes into cryptocurrencies, it's going to disrupt social order, because without our ability to manipulate the monetary supply and manipulate people's behavior, then we'll lose control over the financial and social order. And so now you understand what that means. Now that you understand what that means and you understand what countries that you may be in that could cause bigger risk, now let's look at the upside, right? Let's see what the opportunities are for the U.S. and for other people as well. Because, like I said, this is times of volatility like this. Well, for some people that aren't paying attention, it could be the biggest disaster of their life. But for those that are paying attention and even better positioned for it, it's the largest opportunity of their life. And so I want to tell you about that opportunity, and more importantly, how to position for that, which we will as soon as I come back. Remember, you are listening to The Mark Moss Show, and I'll be back in just a second. All right, you are back with the brand new Mark Moss Show, where I am bringing to you each and every week literally the biggest opportunity of your life. And not just your life, not just my life. I'm talking about multiple generations. And of course, I am talking about the technological revolution of Bitcoin, of decentralization, of cryptocurrencies. And as I've been saying, it is the biggest asymmetric opportunity of our life. We have more upside than downside, and you get that by having asymmetric information, which is what I'm going to bring to you each and every week. So make sure you have bookmarked, put a time and a date on your calendar right now while you're listening for the station that it's on. All right. The other thing, this is a brand new show, and I'm going to bring you so much value. It's going to change your life. And what I'd love is if you'd tweet at me. I'm the number one Mark Moss. It's just the numeral one Mark Moss. Send me a tweet. And if you ask me a question, put hashtag Mark Moss Show, and I will answer your question on the radio on the next show. All right. So I'd love to interact with you. I'd love to answer your questions. I want to know what you want to hear about, because I want to bring you the things you want to hear about. It's not about me. It's about you. All right. I want to tell you what I wish I could hear if I was on the other side of the table. Now, back to where we were talking about, China banned it again, why they're not really able to shut it down. We talked about why they need to shut this down and why other countries may need to shut this down as well. I introduced the trilemma to you, and I explained to you what that trilemma was. Now, jumping back into it, past the trilemma, I want to explain to you what the opportunity is. And so China has basically kicked all Bitcoin mining and has now banned all its people from participating in Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. Now, a country cannot stop Bitcoin. They can't stop it. Now, most countries know this. Many of the lawmakers in the United States know this. They can't stop it. They can't shut it down. The only thing they can do is make it illegal for their own people, their own citizens to participate in. So they can say, hey, if we catch you, we'll put you in prison for life or something like that. But they can't stop it. And so really what they're doing is they're just preventing their people from having this opportunity. And it just moves to what I call the free part of the world, right? And so for those, it's a little bit of game theory where if a few countries want to shut it down, the countries that adopt it are going to have this competitive advantage. And so right now is this opportunity for the entire United States. China has just kicked all the mining out, and where the majority of that mining, the computer processing power has gone, has been to the United States. Texas has been one of the biggest beneficiaries of that. Texas has, of course, the oil industry, the energy industry, so not just oil, but natural gas, etc. More energy than they know what to do with, and they are able to now take this natural gas that's being right now at this moment completely wasted, literally being vented off into the atmosphere or flamed off. They burn it, and they can take that trash and turn it into treasure. They can take that trash, that natural gas, and they can convert it into energy, into electricity that can power the Bitcoin network. And so that's why so much of this that's left China has come to the United States and specifically Texas. And so this is a massive opportunity for the United States to come out ahead on this. This is, an order of national security, right? I mean, throughout the beginning of time, nations really had the nations that had natural resources were the ones that really came out ahead, right? If they had gold, if they had oil, et cetera. And now energy is one of those things, and having the ability to mine Bitcoin is a big opportunity. And not just for the country, but also for the people of the United States as well. And so which way will the United States go? We'll have to wait and see. My opinion, and I've done several videos on this topic specifically on my YouTube channel, talking about how, one, why the U.S. would not want to, why it would really hurt the United States if they made it illegal, and even more importantly, how they couldn't do it even if they tried. And so I think, or maybe I'm hopeful, but I think that the United States sees this opportunity. I know there's at least a few dozen lawmakers in the government in the United States right now that understand this, this opportunity that's available, and they want to jump on this. Now, by the way, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show, brand new show where I'm going to bring to you the latest information on Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies and the decentralized revolution each and every week. So I give you the asymmetric information you need to have the asymmetric opportunity. Now, if you're not following me on Twitter, send me a tweet, @1MarkMoss, at me there, ask me a question, and I will make sure to answer it on my next show. All right, now, on top of this opportunity that we have, the United States could have, they could really come up with China kicking it out. But at the same time, they could not, right? And the United States also is faced with the same trilemma that China is. And so what will they do in regards to that trilemma? Now, they could try to regulate it out of existence. Again, they can't shut it down, but they could make it very difficult or impossible for the American people to participate in it. This week was something interesting. The infamous leader of Tesla. I'm talking about Elon Musk. I'm not sure if he's famous or infamous or whatever. You make up your own mind on that. But he's pretty outspoken, to say the least. I think his Twitter account has, 40-50 million followers. So he's pretty well known in that space. And, he's been pretty outspoken in the cryptocurrency space overall. And, I'm not a super big fan. I think he's been saying some things without all the education, and he should probably know that he moves markets and might try to be a little more responsible. That being said, he was interviewed this week with Kara Swisher for the invite-only code conference in Beverly Hills, California. And during that conversation, Elon Musk argued that global governments should steer clear of trying to regulate Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. He said, quote, "It is not possible to, I think, destroy crypto, but it is possible for governments to slow down its advancement," end quote. And so what he's saying there is, and then he went on to say, they asked him whether the U.S. government should be involved in Bitcoin and crypto regulation. Musk responded, quote, "I would say do nothing," end quote. And the reason why is we need innovation. If the Wright brothers, who invented the airplane, by the way, if the Wright brothers had to go ask permission, if they could try to invent an airplane, it never would have happened. Innovation needs to move in a way that it can grow without that. The internet, for example, would have never survived if it hadn't been for the government actually passing laws to prevent liability to allow it to grow. And so this innovation will only stifle the growth. Now, in China's case, that's what they want. As a matter of fact, Christine Lagarde from the ECB, the European Central Bank, she said, quoting her, quote, "innovation threatens our financial stability." Well, it doesn't threaten financial stability. It threatens their financial monopoly. But per Elon Musk, I would agree, let innovation happen. We need innovation. It's that important. And so I definitely would agree with Elon Musk on that one. China is going the other way. I think the U.S. will be on the open side. I hope so. It still is America, the land of the free, and I hope that is the case that they take. But remember, like I said, at first they laugh at you, then or they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, and then eventually they join you. We've seen countries like El Salvador now announce it as legal tender. All right. So you're listening to the Mark Moss Show, where I talk about Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, and the biggest opportunity you'll ever have in your lifetime. I got a couple friends coming on. I'm going to bring some friends on. We're going to talk about some other news that's happening. So you're aware of what's happening. We're going to discuss these. You get a little bit more insight than just me. Some fun discussion. It's going to be really fun. I'd love to see what they have to say. Bring this latest news to you. So I'm going to be right back. Stay tuned with the Mark Moss Show. And I'll be back in just a second.